You're now listening to the Tax Smart REI podcast, the number one tax podcast for real estate investors.
Your source for all things real estate, accounting, and tax. Here we reveal our secrets that can save you thousands in taxes, streamline your accounting process, and help grow your business. Stay tuned to hear insightful interviews with industry experts, successful real estate investors, and current clients on what strategies they use to grow their business and how they steer clear of Uncle Sam.
Hey, thanks for tuning into this episode of the Tax Smart REI podcast. Today, Ryan and I are going to be talking about the tax benefits of investing in oil and gas. We're going to cover working interests, the deductions associated with working interests, how mineral rights are treated for tax purposes, and then also how you can 1031 exchange into mineral rights or working interests and defer your taxes when you sell a rental property. So, Ryan, do you want to just kick us off with talking a little bit about what working interests are and kind of just going through how they work from a tax perspective?
Yeah. So first thing that we're going to kind of talk about is the uniqueness of really passive activity loss rules. That's kind of what we're circling back to. We talk a lot about on our podcast, real estate by default is passive in nature, but there's this unique part under section 469. There's almost like a carve out, kind of like real estate professional status, that specifically deal with working interests in oil and gas. Okay, so the first thing, big picture to talk about, is that a royalty interest in an oil and gas investment is generally considered passive, but a working interest in an oil and gas well is actually considered active or non-passive. So I think we'll kind of talk a little bit more about that as we go, but that's kind of the first main thing, right? You basically have a direct interest in the well, right? The well that's literally drilling down or sideways, right? However they work, we're not experts in that, but the thing that's actually drilling into the ground. Right. So that's the first thing. We've got this non-passive versus normally it being passive for something like a royalty interest. And on other podcasts that we've had, say with Troy Eckerd, we've talked about those things quite a bit in detail. So the nuance here is that the taxpayer, if that's you, you have to hold that directly or through an entity that does not limit your liability. That comes down to the wording that we're using is under 469C3A. If you're going to go look that up. So you need to be careful, one, of just simply how you're holding that. Okay. So be careful there. That's number two, big aspect to this. Okay. And the last part to mention that's one of the nuances here is that you as an investor in this working interest, again, not royalty, you basically have to be directly responsible for your own losses that might come about from this investment, right? Because you might drill into the ground and you could actually have nothing be there, right? I think Troy on other podcasts, I kind of talked about, hey, the chances and whatnot are becoming less and less risky. The technology that we have is getting more and more accurate of where the oil is. But at the end of the day, you have to basically be able to bear that loss, that there's actually really nothing commercially viable as far as oil and gas goes. So those are kind of the main things that you got to be careful of. One, this is a working interest. Two, how are you holding this? And three, that you're actually subject to or going to bear some of the losses yourself in all of this investment. So comments on that?
That was a great summary. So like the bottom line is if you invest in a working interest in oil and gas, the losses will be non-passive. They're going to be non-passive because there's a special carve out under 469C3 cap A that specifically carves these out, even if you're not materially participating. So there's no reps, there's no short-term rental loophole, there's no crazy strategy. You just need to have the working interest. You can't limit your liability on it. And then it will be non-passive. And by the way, if you're listening to this out there, this is black and white directly in the tax code itself under section 469. There's no ambiguity here in terms of whether or not is this legit. It's been this way for a very long time. It is 100%. It's in the tax code is as plainly as it could possibly be.
Yep. And I think as we think back maybe to the tax code overall being a series of incentives from the government. And again, I think Troy probably brought this up. I'm trying to remember. But at the end of the day, you might think, what's going on here? Right. And what I think is going on here is that we're still a net importer. Right. And so the government is trying to put out these small incentives. Sometimes we get credits and sometimes we get a unique thing like this. And I'd be curious for those who are in this field, you know, other comments they might have. But at the end of the day, they're trying to make this beneficial for you as an investor to invest into these oil and gas working interests. And you're taking on some risk for sure that you might actually lose the investment, right? That's kind of the third part of kind of the big picture overview. So from that, I think we should start talking about some of the deductions that come about it. It's kind of nuanced. We normally talk about, you know, these rental properties, you've got the normal things that we know from Schedule E, right? But with a working interest in an oil and gas field, well, there might be a little bit of like, what does that really look like? So there's four main different types of deductions. So number one, intangible drilling costs. Then we've got tangible drilling costs. Then we've got depletion. And we've got the lease operating expenses. So I'm going to try to take these one by one. Tom, feel free to jump in as we go through these. But number one, the intangible drilling costs. So, you know, tangible, intangible. Intangible would be things like labor, fuel, repairs, supplies, like all of these things that are necessary for drilling. But again, intangible, right? And these are related to the drilling, preparing the wells, and these really have generally no salvage value because they're intangible, right? You pay someone to do labor, that's it, it's gone. There's no kind of physical product there that's remaining. The unique thing here is that you being an owner of one of these working interests, generally you can deduct the full amount of these IDCs or intangible drilling costs. We might kind of use that phrasing, you might see that acronym thrown around a lot, in the year that they're incurred. Okay, and this really can offer a large, substantial tax deduction. So for an example, let's say you invest $100,000. We'll keep the example simple. You invest $100,000 into this oil and gas direct working interest well. And let's say 80% or $80,000 of that investment goes towards the intangible drilling costs in the first year. Because you can actually write these off in the first year, you now have an $80,000 deductible expense, right? Loss really that we're kind of starting to generate here in the first year that could go against your ordinary or other non-passive income. Again, depending on the project, but that's really what we just talked about is now this loss, if we meet the other kind of criteria we talked about earlier, this could be a non-passive loss. So that's really the first main category and that the intangible part can be really significant. The second part is the tangible drilling costs. And so these are kind of the physical, right, tangible costs of the physical equipment used in the drilling, okay? So we've got intangible just talked about. Now we've got the equipment. This is the tangible. So these costs are generally capitalized and depreciated, and it's usually seven-year period, seven-year asset lives. And according to Makers, these would also be bonus eligible property. And just keep in mind, right, current tax law, we've got 60% in 2024. Okay, if this is looking at something you did in 2023, a lot of people are preparing their 2023 tax returns right now, that could be 80%. But just keep that in mind, eligible for bonus depreciation. Okay, now the third part is the depletion. Okay, so the depletion that we have of the resources. And so this is kind of unique. This is actually using a percentage, but this is basically a percentage of the gross income from the oil and gas that's produced. So you get a depletion expense, again, based on this percentage. And right now the IRS limits for depletion for these oil and gas wells is 15% of that gross income, okay, from that property. So we've got so far these three, okay, last one that we'll comment on is the lease operating expenses. So these are kind of the normal operating expenses kind of to run a business. So we've got maintenance, we've got marketing, legal fees, all of that kind of like a normal business that's up and running. Those can then be deducted in the current year. So the main ones, again, just highlighting it one more time, intangible drilling costs. That's the really significant kind of first investment kind of getting up and running. The second one is the tangible drilling costs. That's kind of the equipment. The third one is the depletion. That's that percentage that we're using, kind of depletion of the resources. And the fourth is kind of those normal operating expenses like maintenance and marketing and things like that. So you've got all of these elements, which generally in that first year is going to drive a large loss. And if we meet the criteria to actually say this is non-passive, well, now we've got this non-passive loss and we do not need to materially participate.
Yeah, so. No, it's super powerful, these deductions and these working interests. I've seen them before. I've seen tax returns and they can be quite significant. So you just got to watch out there if you are taking this on. Just be aware of that unlimited liability aspect of it. You want to make sure you touch base with your attorneys, your advisors, to make sure this actually makes sense for your situation and your risk tolerance prior to making any moves. You know, you don't want to let the tax tail wag the dog. If you're not comfortable with an investment like this, if you're not comfortable with the risk, then you might be better suited with a different investment strategy or another opportunity. So just kind of want to make that clear. Oil and gas can be quite powerful from a tax perspective, but you always want to make sure that you're protecting the downside and you're making an investment that makes sense for your situation. If you want to learn a little bit more about how the oil and gas game works, we've had Troy Eckert on the show on episode 252 and 262 to go through how the oil and gas investing game works. So you go check that out. But we're going to continue right along here with more tax benefits. Hey, are you tired of working with generalist CPAs that tell you you can't use the real estate professional status, the short-term rental loophole, or cost segregation studies, or worse, have no idea what these things are? If so, it's time to elevate your game and work with a CPA firm that gets it. Here at Hull CPA, we've worked with thousands of investors, helping them save millions of dollars in taxes through proactive tax strategy and planning, tax preparation, and outsourced accounting solutions. So if you're ready to elevate your game, make tax filing painless, and save thousands of dollars in taxes, what are you waiting for? Head on over to www.therealestatecpa.com/become-client and request an initial consultation today. We are accepting clients for the 2023 and 2024 tax years. So if you're looking for a change, you have nothing to lose. Just head on over to www.therealestatecpa.com/become-client. Fill out the form. We look forward to hearing more about your situation and how we can help. But for now, we'll dive right back into today's episode. So now we're going to move on to mineral rights, right? So we just covered working interest where you're making an investment. You're getting unlimited liability, but you're in an operating interest. That's what they're called, operating interests. Okay. Now, when we're looking at mineral rights are a little bit different. With a mineral right, you're not investing directly in like necessarily the production and you're not going to have all these operating expenses. Instead, the way mineral rights work is you're investing in the ownership of the subsurface oil and gas, coal, metals, et cetera, right? You're investing in the rights that are beneath the land. And what happens is when you do that, the income from these mineral rights are typically going to be royalties and it's considered ordinary income. So that means it's taxed at ordinary tax rates up to 37% plus state taxes and all that good stuff. And then from there, you're going to be typically eligible for depletion deduction, just like kind of what Ryan had mentioned before in the previous section.
Hey, so this is a first here for the show, but this is a revision to the original episode that was recorded. And the reason for this revision is that during the episode, Ryan and I had mentioned that royalties from mineral rights, so not the working interest, but the royalties from the mineral right interests, that they were passive income like rental income, and you could use losses from rental properties or other passive income sources to offset the royalties from these mineral rights. However, because Ryan and I were somewhat new to this, we misread and misinterpreted the language within the regulations. And this is a first, like I said, it's the first for us to happen, but we wanted to re-record this and put this in here to clear the air. At the end of the day, royalties from mineral rights are gonna be considered portfolio income, much in the way that interest, dividends, annuities, etc. are treated, which means they are non-passive and you typically cannot use losses from rental real estate to offset the royalties from mineral rights unless, of course, you have reps or the short-term rental loophole. And the code section for this, the code section is right under section 469 E1 cap AI cap I, and it states that gross income from interest, dividends, annuities, and royalties not derived from the ordinary course of a trade or business are not passive, right? So they are non-passive. And Ryan and I were, of course, aware of this piece of the code. However, the way mineral rights are described is when you have a mineral right in oil and gas, you're not actually selling the property to the end, the user, the people who are actually going to drill the wells and actually pull the oil out of the ground. You are leasing it to them. And because it was a lease, we jumped the gun and made the assumption that it was passive. However, again, some very knowledgeable people here in our firm were able to show us code sections where that is not the case, and we confirmed everything, and it is indeed non-passive. Further, not only is it in the section 469, but there's a regulation section, reg section 1.469-2 cap TF3, that says rental of non-depreciable property, so in other words, land, if there is less than 30% of the unadjusted basis is depreciable, so in other words, there's relatively no improvements, there's no building, you're primarily renting land, that the income will be treated as income from a not from a passive activity, to be clear. So it's after reviewing the regulations, after reviewing the statutory code, digging in and speaking to people who are very knowledgeable on the subject, we did indeed confirm that royalties are non-passive. So wanted to issue this revision on the episode. And if you do have any questions about this, we do have a thread going on in our Facebook group, www.taxsmartinvestors.com/Facebook. If you're not already a member, you could jump in on the conversation. But want to thank you for taking the time to listen to this. And with that being said, we'll dive right back into today's episode.
All right, cool. Now we're moving right along. So there's even more tax benefits to all this, right? So we went through how if you're investing in this in working interest, you're going to be able to take losses from the working interest against your active income. And also we talked about with the mineral rights, typically passive, and you're going to be playing the passive activity game there. But because oil and gas working interests are typically considered real property, you're actually able to 1031 exchange properties that you're invested in into working interests. So for example, say you have a property and you're done with the hassles of property management. Like, you know what? I just want a nice passive investment that I don't have to do any work in. You can go ahead and do a working interest, and you can still get the benefit of having the non-passive losses via the 1031 exchange. One thing I want to mention about this strategy is from the conversations we had with Troy, from the research that I've done, is typically you don't sell these interests. Like, so once you kind of 1031 exchange into the working interests, you're kind of like in that land for life. And the reason for that, from my understanding, is that there's a limited amount of wells or a limited amount of acreage in the United States that actually has viable oil and gas that you can actually tap into. And they're always coming up with new technology and new ways to tap into and get even more out of those wells. So if you have that property today, they might tap it out today, but then 5-10 years from now, they might have new technology that all of a sudden can, you know, grab even more out of that well. One of the questions that we get when we talk to some people about this was, well, okay, so I 1031 exchange into my mineral rights. What happens when it's done? And like I just mentioned, typically this seems to be, from my understanding of it, there, this is the end game. The end game is you would pass this on, presumably when you pass away. You wouldn't necessarily sell. So that's how it works with working interests. Working interests typically qualify, very little detail to really drill down, no pun intended, onto that specific issue. But now when we're looking at the non-operating interests, and again, the non-operating interests are going to be the mineral rights interest, things get a little bit more dicey there, okay? Some types of mineral rights will qualify for a 1031 exchange, other ones will not. So I'm just going to start with the ones that do not, all right? Just keep it nice and simple, and we're not going to drill down too far into the details here, just to keep it simple. So mineral rights that do not qualify for 1031 exchange treatment are going to be production payments. And production payments are when someone pays an upfront investment to get paid back at a later date based on how much is produced. So in other words, your 1031 proceeds would be the upfront payment to get paid back later. And the IRS doesn't like this. They see this as a form of financing. And because it has a set time or amount limit, it's not treated as owning a piece of real property when it comes in terms of 1031. So long story short, production payments are not going to count as eligible property for a 1031 exchange. So just to put that out there, that's off the plate. So what does actually qualify for 1031 exchanges when it comes to mineral rights? Well, typically royalty interests will. And a royalty is a reservation of an interest in future production, but with no obligation to bear any of the cost of productions. And you'll typically receive royalties until the minerals are depleted. And your interest in this case is treated as fee ownership, so actually ownership in real property. And when you're transferring the mineral rights to the end user who's ultimately going to mine the land for you, you're doing it as a sublease, okay? So it's a lease and not a sale. So it's still eligible for 1031 exchange treatment. So kind of just to summarize this here, working interests in oil and gas typically will qualify for a 1031 exchange treatment. However, when it comes to mineral rights, not all mineral rights will qualify for 1031 exchange treatment. What won't qualify is going to be production payments, but what will qualify is typically royalty payments because you are subleasing out land that you own. You're still retaining ownership of the land. You're just subleasing out the rights to the end user who will ultimately drill and pull the oil and gas out of the underground wells. So that's kind of a long story short. And again, the reason why you would consider 1031 exchanging into one of these asset classes, there's a few reasons, right? The first one is you don't want to deal with property management anymore. We know when you're dealing with a 1031 exchange, there's a few ways you could do that, right? You could 1031 into a DST, DSTs are always an option. When you're doing a DST, when you're 1031 into a DST, you're typically investing in an institutional grade asset like a Walgreens or a Dollar General, typically low yield, low risk, and there's not much value upside to it. And there's a lot of fees. So some people do like the DST, some people don't, but that's one option. But then you could 1031 exchange the mineral rights. And what mineral rights will allow you to do is let you get a source of income. Okay, so you're gonna have a stream of income. And at the same time, you're not having to deal with the hassles of property management. So there's just another exit plan for you with the 1031 exchange. All right, Ryan, so before we wrap this up and kind of summarize everything here to put a nice little bow on the episode, any comments on any of this?
I think what's nice about the mineral rights or doing a 1031 exchange into this is that you now have a little bit more diversification into just your overall big picture financial investments. Man, I think when we talked with Troy, he did a good job of kind of explaining that. And specifically with oil and gas, you know, a lot of your potential investment, even if we go back to the working interests, comes back to what's just the price of oil. That just comes down to basic supply and demand. So as the economy might be doing well, the oil and gas price might be coming down, and they kind of teeter totter kind of back and forth. But overall, I think my point is just that you've now got potentially multiple different types of assets. You've maybe got an apartment deal, and maybe you've got a single family home or a duplex. Now we've got potentially some oil and gas, specifically kind of the exploration, the drilling that's going down. And maybe now you've even got mineral rights, right? You're just basically being that lessee subleasing your property for someone to mine that. So the point is, again, we've got multiple different types of assets, investments of multiple different streams of income. Some people might say that's too much. You should just focus on one thing rather than trying to dip your toe into all these different things. But at the end of the day, the point is you've got more options available to you. And that's part of why we're doing this specific podcast, especially as it relates to real estate, you know, passive versus non-passive, all those things. But yeah, I think this is really valuable for a lot of our listeners out there who are looking for even more options.
Yeah. And I want to kind of, again, highlight, I know we mentioned it before, but you could play this game actively, you know, quote unquote, actively from a tax perspective, at least, and get those active losses or the non-passive losses with the working interest, or you play it passively with the mineral rights. So there's different ways to play this game, and they could be beneficial to you. And if you're not sure why, you might even want to consider playing the oil and gas game. Again, go back to episode 252 and 262 of this show, and you'll hear an interview with Troy Eckerd, who's been in this game for 40 years. And there's a very compelling case to have exposure to this asset class. So it's just, again, another thing to consider, broaden the horizons of what's available to you, but you ultimately have to do what's right for you and your situation. So if you do have questions on this, we would love to hear them. You can visit www.taxsmartinvestors.com/Facebook to join our free Facebook group, where conversations around taxes are taking place every single day. The ones are taking place just as we speak. I think I got pinged before while we're on the podcast with a question from our Facebook group. So go ahead and check that out. Also, by the way, if you are listening to this, and if you are a tax professional, you're a CPA, you're an EA, if you're looking for a new role, we are hiring. You can go over to www.therealestatecpa.com/careers. You could apply today. And then lastly, if you like this show, if you're a syndicator, fund manager, large scale operator, you're going to love the Major League Real Estate Podcast. That's hosted by Brandon Hall and Dylan Brown, where they dive into tax issues and a whole array of other investment related issues for syndicators, fund managers, and large scale operators. So go check that out on all major podcast platforms. That's the Major League Real Estate Podcast. That's all for today. And we'll catch you on next week's episode of the Tax Smart REI Podcast.
If you enjoyed the show, please find us on iTunes and leave us a review. You can also email us at contact@therealestatecpa.com with any feedback or topic suggestions. We are always taking on new clients, and with the new tax laws in play, you really don't want to navigate this alone. Let us help you save money on taxes and with your accounting and CFO needs. To become a client, navigate to our client page at therealestatecpa.com and fill out a web form with as much detail about your situation as possible. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great rest of your week.